Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you.
call me Louis. This is my spot.
Hi folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin. You and me, all the love is living.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. guess what? Your package gonna keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity weight, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer at the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, today, because we the topic of immigrants and came up, so today we're going to start off with, we'll go with the title of today's live stream podcast. Mamie Tape, that's M-A-M-I-E, Mamie Tape, T-A-P-E. Civil rights icon. Typically in 2023, when we think of a civil rights icon, we think of somebody like Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, you know, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, people like that. But Mamie Tape, and I'm going to, when I can't, you know, and the thing is, I wasn't even looking, put it this way, 24 hours ago, I had no clue of who she was, nor was I looking for her. But I don't know what I was doing. I came across her story, so I had to read about it. Okay, let me see. Let me get the right, because it's quite a bit written about her. She's really not obscure. Well, let's go with this source right here. I was looking for Wikipedia, which I'll go back. All right, Mamie Tate, and I have a picture of her on the scrolling marquee here on, you know, on Blog Talk Radio. So let me, I'm reading some articles here. This one is titled, Mamie Tape was barred from school because she was Chinese. So her parents sued. And in the scrolling marquee, I also have a picture of her and her family. And I'll post this up on our Facebook page, which is Smiles TV. That's the old name, DIY Housing TV. But it's on our blog topic. All right, discrimination against Asians in the United States is not a recent occurrence. More than a century ago, in the mid to late 1800s, Chinese exclusion was institutionalized in United States society, particularly in the state of California. Among the struggles Chinese immigrants endured at that time, an 8-year-old Chinese American girl tried to attend one of San Francisco's public schools and was refused. Her name was Mamie Tape, and she was the plaintiff in the landmark California Supreme Court case, Tape versus Hurley, and this took place in 1885. Martin Luther King, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and any of your more recent civil rights people weren't even born yet. Okay. The Tate family. Mamie's parents were both Chinese immigrants. According to history.com, her father, Ju Dip, D-I-P, and Ju is spelled J-E-U. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. I need to, you know what, I got Mandarin friends. I'm going to check with them before I start doing these Skype stories. Anyway, so who would later take the name of Joseph Tape, that was his Americanized or Anglicized name, immigrated from the Guangdong province in southern China. At age 12, he moved to San Francisco. He became a house servant for a dairy rancher and later graduated to driving the milk and milk delivery wagon. Mamie's mother, Mamie, now just talk about anglicizing. Okay, Mamie's mother, whose anglicized American name, mind you, she's Chinese, Mary Gladry, Mary McGladry. That's it. Mary McGladry, that's Irish, okay, was from Shanghai, China, and she moved to the United States in 1868. That's 100 years before the race riots after the assassination of Martin Luther King, when she was just 11 years old, okay. After a few months in Chinatown, she was taken in by the Ladies Protection and Relief Society. She was fortunate as during this time, most Chinese women were known for working in brothels in Chinatown. Mary was schooled in English and quickly adapted Western manners. She later became an accomplished photographer and painter. In 1875, she and Joseph married. Soon after, Joseph became a respected businessman. Now, that's one of the clues. Now, we haven't heard about the Chinese in this country wanting reparations. Their key to success was because, and I'll say this, this is just L.A.'s thought. Some people say, depends on who you talk to, that the United States was not designed for black people. Well, the United States was designed for capitalists. From Anthony Johnson, who was the first recognized and documented slave owner in the United States. Anthony Johnson, his anglicized American name, was an African who came to this country as an indentured servant, which is just a glorified name for a slave. But after his contract was up, Anthony Johnson, a black man in today's terms, became the first recognized and documented slave owner, and he owned white slaves too, in the United States. The United States was designed and still is designed for capitalists. All right, anyway, so this, as I read this stuff, just look how these people are going from, because remember, they were discriminated against. Mamie Tape is a civil rights icon, and I had to put the story out there because nobody, when it comes to civil rights, really nobody even talks about the Chinese community or even Asians. Anyway, so soon after, Joseph became a respected businessman. Okay. His ventures including a delivery business, a transportation business, and an interpreting service took off. So Mamie Tape's dad had three businesses going on. All right. The Tape settled outside of Chinatown in the Cow Hollow neighborhood of San Francisco. In 1876, the first of their children, Mamie, was born. All right. The Chinese Exclusion Act, all right? The Tape family became an example of Chinese immigrants who settled in the United States and became successful when they became capitalists. Mind you, they didn't march or protest, all right? They started businesses. They became capitalists. That's how they got the social respect and political power to do what they needed to do. All right. The Tape family became an example of Chinese immigrants who settled in the United States and became successful. But with the rising number of Chinese immigrants, many locals started to loathe them, the player haters of the day, blaming them for taking their jobs. Growing anti-settlement led, growing anti-Chinese sentiment led to the passage of the Chinese Exclusion Act in 1882. Now, let me bring this up right now, because I'm going to give you some more history. Just like, you know, you have a lot of black people that talk about, you know, Black Wall Street, which happened in 1921. What is, there were Chinese versions of Black Wall Street 100 years before Black Wall Street happened. And essentially, it once again, people who got victimized were attacked by basically broke people, people that got jealous of their wealth. All right, anyway. So the Chinese Exclusion Act, which was in 1982, this law officially banned Chinese immigration for 10 years and prevented all Chinese from becoming naturalized citizens. Okay. And if you go online, there's posters of that, you know, Chinese exclusion, I mean, all this kind of stuff. Okay, versus Hurley. This is a court case. Unlike Chinese immigrants, the Tapes were considered a middle-class family in San Francisco. Living in a little-known white neighborhood, Joseph and Mary believed that Mamie should attend their neighborhood primary school. But Mamie was denied admission to the Spring Valley School by Jenny Hurley, the principal. Mamie's situation was not new, as anti-Chinese sentiment was prevalent at the time, but what was uncommon is that Mamie and her family refused to back down. Now, of course, they had money where they could refuse to do that. What? And we can take a page out of Booker T. Washington's book. Get your money straight first. That's why I play that Claude Anderson piece practically every day to start this podcast. You need to, it's not about racism, it's about capitalism. Get your money straight first on a household level, on a community level, and race and color go out the door. All right. They filed a protest with the San Francisco School Board. The school board, however, ruled in favor of Hurley, stating that Mamie's exclusion was lawful. Once again, the Tapes fought back. They hired a lawyer, William Gibson, and sued Hurley and the school board on Mamie's behalf. Now, mind you, people, this is happening. Martin Luther King, none of the civil rights people that we know, you know, the contemporary ones, particularly the black ones, weren't even a thought yet. They were not even born yet. There was no such thing as the NAACP, the Urban League, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, all, you know, all that. Actually, really, if we take a look back at what the Chinese did to overcome discrimination, back in the 1880s, okay, and from what I'm seeing, it was entrepreneurship. That was what they did to overcome. All right, anyway, Gibson brought Mamie's Tape case to the Superior Court. We argued that the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, which states, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States, of a state within they reside. Mamie was born in the United States, therefore she was American. Just like any other American, she had the right to study in any public school and should have equal access to education. The court sided with Mamie. It would be unjust to levy an unforced tax upon Chinese residents to help maintain our schools and yet prohibit their children born from the education in those schools. Eventually, Tate versus Hurley advanced to the Supreme Court of California And in March of 1885, the court ruled that the state law required public education open to all children. Maniat won the case. It was considered a cornerstone legal battle for Asian Americans. So that case, I consider it a blueprint. All right. Okay, let me see. And there's quite a bit written about this case. And let's see, Mamie Tate. Okay, Mamie, that's Mary. I don't want that. All right. Hold on. Let me read about this, though. All right, Mary Tate. All right, Mary Tate, 1857 to 1934. Mary Tate, now this is somebody other than Mamie, she was Chinese, though, Chinese American. She was a desegregation activist who fought for Chinese Americans' access to education, notably in the case of Tate versus Hurley in 1885. All right, in which the Supreme Court of California stated that public schools could not exclude her daughter, Mamie, for being Chinese American. Okay, that's Mary's mother. All right, so hats off to Mamie Tate and the Tate family. I consider that whole family civil rights icons. Now going to another topic, we're still with, and I'm bringing up these stories because now there are parents, Mamie Tate's parents, Mary and you know the guy, you know, she was her husband. They were immigrants to this country, and they saw the way to make it in this country. Now, this is over 100 years ago. It was entrepreneurship. So you won't read anything about reparations or wanting stuff from the government in their stories. But let me, because they were shit on too. My regulars know everybody has been shit on globally. All right. Now, we're still in the Chinese community now. We're dealing with Chinese immigrants. We're going back to the year of 1877, the San Francisco riot of 1877. The San Francisco riot of 1877 was a three-day pogrom. Now, that's pogrom is spelled P-O-G-R-O-M. Now, before we go further, let's open up program, and what does Wikipedia say about what a program is, which comes from a Russian term. A program, which is once again spelled P-O-G-R-O-M, is a violent riot with the aim of massacring or expelling an ethnic or religious group, in this case particularly Jews. Now, this is coming from a Russian point of view, all right, using that word. All right, now we got Ukrainians in here now. We have Ukrainian immigrants in this country now. And, some of them will probably get discriminated against. But the one thing guaranteed for sure, many of them will become entrepreneurs because, once again, the United States from day one is geared towards capitalism. This country was designed for capitalists, no matter what color. All right, the San Francisco riot of 1877 was a three-day pogrom, which is another word for riot, if you go use the Russian language. waged against Chinese immigrants in San Francisco. And I've threw this stat out here before. The average Chinese carryout in the United States, which are basically family-based businesses, on average, taking a gross revenue of $1,100,000 a year. That's what they're taking. So the next time you go into a Chinese restaurant, particularly a carryout, forget about the sit-down type. I'm talking about the carryouts. And you see typically 2 to 3 generations of family members working in there. That business, on average, some taking more, some taking less, but average, $1,100,000 a year. All right, so it was waged against Chinese immigrants in San Francisco, California, by the city's majority white population from the evening of July 23rd to the night of July 25th, 1877. The ethnic violence which swept Chinatown resulted in the deaths and destruction of more than $1 million worth of property belonging to the Chinese immigrant population. 1877, where Black Wall Street happened in 1921. So 44 years before that, the Chinese version of Black Wall Street, which happened 44 years before Black Wall Street, once again, everybody gets shit on too. Okay. The ethnic violence which swept across Chinatown, and here's another clue, Chinatown. These Chinese immigrants, they couldn't get government jobs that existed at the time. They weren't getting hired by, you know, white-owned businesses at the time. And most businesses in the United States, many, are family-based businesses. So if you weren't a blood relative or married into the family, you're just not going to get hired. So is it racism, or we hire family first? In the Amish community, Amish is family based. Amish businesses are family based businesses. Mennonite businesses are family based businesses. They're community based businesses. If you're not a member of the family or married into the family or the community, you're not going to get hired. I went into a McDonald's once up in the, right across the line in Washington, D.C. And I guess you call it Hyattsville, Maryland. And everybody in that McDonald's was Nigerian. I imagine it was family members or close family members, friends or whatever. You're not going to come from Lillehammer, Norway, and get hired at that place because they hire who they know or who's ever in the family. That's how it works. You have some Native American casinos. And a lot of those casinos, the Native American tribe owns them. And that money is used to hire people within the tribe. And for those who can't work or do not get hired by the casino, all right, they still get a check from the tribe, from the proceeds from the casino. But you're not going to walk there from Timbuktu and get hired, okay? That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So a lot of what we call racism, you have to think, no, people hire to a high degree who they know. If it's in the family, okay, I'll give you an example. Are you going to knock on a door, if you're a man, go knock on some stranger's door, and you know that it's a married household there, okay? You're not going to go in there and get the privileges of that family. You're not going to sit down and eat at the table, okay, on a regular basis. You're not going to sleep with the head of the household or the wife of the whatever. It families, that's what it is. It's a family. You get certain rights and privileges as a family, all right? Same thing with tribes of people, all right? So they discovered, okay, you know what? We can't get a job at the post office. You can't get a job at mayor, at City Hall. You know, we don't have the political clout or power like that. All right. So we have to start not only our own business, we have to start Chinatown and patronize each other. We're going to do a history of Chinatown one day. But that's how they had to do it. Now, there's a black version of that because, as some of you know, and I've visited some of them, and we've had black mayor of townships on here. We're not talking about black mayors of cities. No, I'm talking about towns that were basically founded over 100 years ago by former slaves. And all those towns to this day, over 100 years later, that family house has been passed down from generation to generation over 100 years. Anyway, getting back to the San Francisco riot of 1877, there were four deaths. Let's see. Here's the background of it. Historian Theodore Hittel, okay, wrote about the developing competition between the Chinese and Caucasian workers. Initially in mining and in more general work throughout the 1850s. As a class, the Chinese were harmless, peaceful, and exceedingly industrious. But as they were remarkably economical and spent little or none of their earnings except for the necessities of life, okay, they didn't buy into the Western or the Americanized. They weren't heavy into the consumption. That's what we Americans are really guilty of, mass consumption. But that's another story. Anyway, other than the necessity of life, chiefly to merchants of their own nationality, they soon began to provoke the prejudice and ill will of those who could not see any value in their labor to the country. By degrees, they began to also branch out into occupations which interfered or were supposed to interfere with the wages of white labor. They were not only hired out as servants and laborers, but they became laundrymen and turned their attention successfully to the various mechanical branches of industry, which would yield them wages and in a number of ways picked up money which would otherwise have gone to white hands. Many of the Chinese immigrants who had come to America to work on the first transcontinental railroad were left looking for other employment at its completion in 1869 in San Francisco. Chinese workers were often hired at cheaper rates than Caucasian workers, and the Chinese immigrants were often convenient scapegoats for larger economic inquiries. Once again, everybody, there's not one group of people on the planet that hasn't been shit on. But what I like about this Chinese story here is, once again, they That's what the Claude Anderson piece. They got their money right first. Okay. Look, think about it. Chinese Americans, they were shit on. They became entrepreneurs. All right. And they did it on the grid. You go to San Francisco, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, New York City. There's a Chinatown in all those places. The post office was not going to hire them. They can get hired there now. But why? They got a family business. They don't need a government job. All right, from 1873 to the rest of the 1870s, a severe economic crisis swept the United States, known to history as the Long Depression or the Great Depression. Okay, you know what? They made it through that. All right, I'm going to another ethnic group. Let's see. Then I'm going to the phone lines. But it there's opportunity in the ethnic, in the immigrant community that's here and that will be coming here. And if you can partner up with some of them before they close ranks. You just can't get in and do business with any of them. Let's go to the topic of lynching. Once again, think about my byline here today. Everybody gets your... So we saw the Chinese came in here, and globally, nobody can touch the Chinese when it comes to manufacturing. Nobody can touch them, not even close. All right, Now for lynching. In 1891, the New Orleans lynchings were murders of 11 Italian Americans and immigrants in New Orleans by a mob that alleged their role of accusing them of killing other people. The largest lynching in the United States of America, let's see, they noted it as on March 14th, 1861. They note that particular day was the day of the largest, and it was of Italian Americans. Let's see. Massacre. Let's see. In 1871, 1871 Chinese massacre, one of the worst lynchings in U.S. history. And that happened. That happened out in California. So when the Italians, their answer to discrimination in this country at that time period was because they couldn't get hired at the post office. The mayor of the town wasn't hiring them for any government jobs at the hall. And most big people, a lot of businesses back in the day, were family-based business. So if you're not a family member by blood, by marriage, or a friend of the family, you're just not going to get married at Joe's Shoe Shop. Prince, there's a spot in Washington, D.C. They're franchised now. But Ben's Chili Bowl, I love chili dogs. It's pure junk food, but I might have a Ben's Chili Dog. I mean, I haven't had one in 4 years. Okay. So, but Ben's Chili Bowl is a family-based business. Virginia Ali, the widow of Ben Ali started, well, Ben and his wife, Virginia. Ben Ali, it was his recipe. He passed on some years ago. But for Virginia Ali, she's in her 80s now. And you can still see her at Ben's almost every day. They got more than one location now in the DMV. They got, you know, a location at the ballpark, at National Airport. But Virginia Ali is still visible. But Virginia Ali, and they're originally from Trinidad, Tobago. The family works in the business. Now, they have some non-family members that work in the business, but, you know, they're either other relatives or friends of the family. Once again, you're not going to walk in there from Lillehammer, Norway, or Novosibirsk, Russia, or Beijing, China. It's not an based business. It's highly successful because, like I say, they franchise now. But it's a family-based business. Family gets hired first. The way it is. So in many cases, it's not racist. Family hires family first. That's around the globe, no matter what time period of history. And then, you know, so-and-so married into the family, that's another way, or a friend of the family. So Little Italy, the next time you come across Little Italy or visiting Little Italy, if they have one in your town, just keep that in mind. Little Italy, as well as Chinatown, or when you had the history of both of them, both of these ethnic groups were discriminated against. Both of these ethnic groups had people that were lynched. Both of these ethnic groups had ancestors, couldn't get jobs. So what did they do? Once again, the United States was designed for capitalists. Give yourself a job, give your family a job, and then trade with each other. I'm sure that the Italian restaurant in Little Italy, they don't go shopping for groceries at Whole Foods. They have an Italian grocery right there in that little neighborhood. Now, they have farming systems. Same with Chinese restaurants. You're not going to catch the – when they go – the rice or whatever, the vegetables, the meat that they prepare the food at, whatever your favorite dish is at the Chinese restaurant, they're not shopping at Whole Foods or Piggly Wiggly. Now, they got their own farming systems, warehousing systems, trucking systems. They got all that set up. Anyway, we'll go more into immigrant housing and history of all that. And at the end of the day, it comes down to entrepreneurship in the capitalistic system. Start a business. Start a family business. And then do business with other people. You got your, you know, you got an industry going, and everybody eats. and they eat well. Okay, anyway, so hats off to Mamie Tape. Civil rights icon. Matter of fact, let me look up something real quick. Okay. Let's see. Mamie Tape. Her case happened 41 years before Martin Luther King was even born. I didn't know Martin Luther King. I don't know what he read. He was a well-read man, doctorate and all that. But I believe civil rights, the African-American or black civil rights leaders, if they look back in American history and looked at what Chinese immigrants did to overcome discrimination and all this other stuff, and what the Italian-Americans did, I think we could have had a whole, because once again, the Chinese, you haven't heard about the Chinese, we want reparations, or the Italians, we want reparations, you haven't heard that battle cry from either one of those ethnic groups. Well, if we go back to the 1800s, entrepreneurship. Now, to be fair, Booker T. Washington was saying that the whole time. And you did have some black folk who started those black townships. They followed that blueprint. Because you had over 700 black townships in the United States. But I'm just saying, and Elijah Muhammad followed it too. But I just find that very interesting that, you know, you didn't hear about them sitting in their counters, they entrepreneurship, and they started their own, you know, Chinatown and Little Italy's. Hire the family. All right, I'm off my soapbox on it today. I just had to. Mamie Tape's story was so fascinating, I had to put it out there. Okay, now I got to find my way back to the studio. Let's see. Oh, here it is. Okay. Give me a few moments here. Common denominators. Like I said, we can look at Amish, Mennonite, Hutterite, immigrant Italian. The common denominator for success in the United States is to start a family-based business. Preferential hiring goes towards family members. It's as simple as that. If you can't, now what I'm about to say, this is for people who are single and haven't married yet. If you're single, don't have a boyfriend or girlfriend, get involved with somebody who has a business, or you guys can start one together. Okay. All right, that's my rantings for today. Let's see. Anybody got any this 619-768-2945? If not, we can kick off early for today. All right, let's see. Okay, let me see. All right, well, okay, it's quiet today. I did have a long rant. All right, well, any topics that you guys want to discuss, just let me know. We'll get it up here. And got 3 minutes. If there's any trending topic, anything you want to put out there, call. Let me know within the next 3 minutes. We'll put it on.
Listen, I want to talk to you poor people, your middle class people, and the ones who thought they made it. Listen to this. I want to talk to the short and the tall. This ain't no racial matter. This thing concerns us all. Do you know one thing? $3 a half a pound for pork chops. Man, that ain't right. And put this in your hat and smoke. Price is going up. Getting the best of me. Listen. Do you know the only time I feel stink is when I'm looking at a cowboy picture on TV? And you listen to this. If you notice they're charging too much for a black eyed pea and butter. To put that back in my car. I went to the store the other day and had my basket stacked. Things cost so damn much, I had to throw it all back. How they look for a poor man to get ahead? Say they gonna charge a dollar and a half for a day old loaf of bread. You tell me that ain't crisis. We got to do something about these prices. Yes, we do. You tell me that ain't inflation, Lord. These prices about to drive me crazy. Listen, I think I'll write my congressman and my senator too. I'm gonna even call the press, see what can he do. If you go to the store today with $40, the people call you a drag. You can bring that little old food bag in two little old paper bags. Do you know that? Look here, have you dug the price of sugar, flour, and meal? Things like that'll make a poor man steal. And they tell you, don't worry about it. We're gonna look out for you. You got a chance. We'll make it up to you with food stamps. Get on up there. God, listen. The Abbey suit today.
Talk about prices, prices.
I'll run you two and a quarter.
Talk about prices.
The way things are going up.
Talk about prices and cries.
You're going to have to start paying for a drink of water.
Talk about prices and cries.
$75 for a pair of shoes and $50 for a hat. That don't make no damn sense for things to be costing like that. Things is getting so tough, my dog is even scared to bear his bones. When he comes back to look for it, some poor joker done dug it up and carried it home. My cat can't find a rat in the attic, all of them packed up and left. He's sitting down eating onions and about to cry himself to death. Talking about prices and prices, y'all.
Prices and prices.
I'm talking about prices and prices.
Prices and prices.
They got to bring them down so we can survive.
Prices and prices.
Do you remember the fuel prices?
Prices and prices.
I used to get in every line I saw so I could get
prices
my shit.
Prices and prices.
Daylight broke on me one day and I was headed
prices
for the cemetery. I said, hold it, y'all. I ain't
prices
going for that.
Prices.
You should have seen me making a U-turn with my
prices
Cadillac and started saying, prices and prices.
Prices and prices.
Crisis in Crisis. That song was put out in 1970-something, 5 or 6 or somewhere around there. It still rings true to today. 254, your mic is open.
Hello?
Yes, hello? Your mic is open. Yeah, we can hear you.
I just wanted to say that almost every immigrant that came to this country had to go through something. If you weren't English, you know, because English came and took over everything. But if you weren't English, you had to pay for it from the Irish to the
right.
Italians to every other ethnic group. You know, you had to pay your tithe, as they say, pay your dues. You're going to get it when you get here. So,
you're absolutely right. The Irish,
and you know,
which is with on Irish slavery,
right? So, the when you first was to say was not, if you look at the history of the ghetto, your first ghetto people were Irish, then followed by the Italian, then followed by Black. So,
well, you also
the Italians
had Jewish,
were basketball
Jewish
players
ghetto.
First. And,
right.
Again,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. So,
you know, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right on that. Any announcements that you want to put out there, Willie? Because we're going to close down early today.
I don't have any announcements.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of which, after we spoke, you know, it with the radio stuff, I've noticed that a lot of your top earning radio stations, one of the common denominators that they have, because the business model is basically simple for radio, you know, sell advertising, but events. They either sponsor their own events and mm-hmm. or they partner with other people with their community events. But that would be, mm-hmm. and then some, have their own, they merchandise their own products, which could be baseball hats, T-shirts, jackets. But the big money maker would be a radio station that put out its own events. Some of them just might do a once-a-year event. But from that, it generates a lot of revenue with vendors and, you know, all that type of stuff. So.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's a pretty simple business model. Commercials and do events. And the stations that didn't do events and might have one salesperson, those are, I guess a lot of those stations were ones that went out of business. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's my ladies on that.
I like your topic,
right,
Dale.
Well,
that was interesting.
Oh,
thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, well, I like I said, I wasn't looking. I don't know what I was looking for yesterday online. I could have been just surfing. And I came across, I mean, we did talk about, we had a guest on yesterday. She brought up the immigrants that were coming up there to Yonkers, New York, which is, I mean, you know, New York City is like 25 minutes away. So, and that matter of fact, we'll probably have somebody on, if I can get them on for tomorrow. To talk about the Ukrainian immigrants that are here. But what I see on a positive note is a lot of them are going to they're going to start businesses. You know, so you've got quite a few from Venezuela. You've had Syria. So, I guess this is a wave of it. I don't think it's negative in my opinion, but I can see within 18, 24 months, 36 months, you'll hear immigrant success stories. I mean, people that have come over here with, and we know a lot of success, you know, those rags to riches type things. I think we'll have a lot of those coming up. So, when I ran across the Mamie tape thing, I was, you know, that was a civil rights case where the daughter couldn't get into school, but the parents came in, and I imagine they had to learn the language, you know, see how things operate, and they were managed to, they had menial jobs, and they started businesses, so they had the resources to fight. So anyway, that's why I had to bring that up. Anyway, Willie, thanks for calling in. Thanks for everybody for calling in and listening in. We're going to cut it short for today. It's almost 12 noon here. It's 11:56 a.m. on the East Coast. Everyone have a good rest of the day. See you guys tomorrow.